Picture a pre-kindergarten classroom in New Jersey where something extraordinary is happening. No teacher is barking commands, no children are acting out. Instead, four-year-olds are calmly organizing their thoughts, controlling their impulses, and staying focused on tasks, all without traditional discipline. This isn't magic. It's the Tools of the Mind curriculum, designed to develop self-regulation rather than drill ABCs and 1-2-3s. When Paul Tuff witnessed this scene shortly after his son's birth, it shattered his assumptions about early childhood education. America has spent decades obsessing over the cognitive hypothesis, the belief that success depends primarily on measurable intelligence. We've built entire industries around brain-building products, shaped education policy around test scores, and convinced ourselves that stuffing information into young minds is the path to prosperity. But what if we've been wrong all along? What if the secret ingredient isn't cognitive horsepower, but something far more fundamental? Character? Nobel laureate James Heckman stumbled upon a paradox that would revolutionize our understanding of success. In the late 1990s, he examined the GED program, which by 2001 was producing nearly 1 in 5 new high school graduates. The logic seemed airtight. If someone could pass a comprehensive equivalency test, they should be academically equal to traditional graduates. But Heckman's data told a different story, a disturbing one. GED recipients demonstrated cognitive abilities matching high school graduates on standardized tests, yet their life trajectories looked nothing alike. At age 22, only 3% of GED holders were enrolled in four-year universities, compared to 46% of traditional graduates. More troubling still, GED holders showed patterns eerily similar to high school dropouts: comparable unemployment rates, similar incomes, equivalent divorce rates, and parallel substance abuse patterns, despite being demonstrably smarter. The missing element? Psychological traits that enabled persistence: delaying gratification, maintaining focus on long-term goals, following through on commitments, adapting to social environments, and managing stress. Childhood stress rewires developing brains. When danger appears, the HPA axis releases hormones, triggering defensive responses. Your mouth goes dry before public speaking because your body conserves fluids for a non-existent physical threat. Our stress response evolved for brief dangers, not chronic worries. Bruce McEwen's allostatic load describes how repeated stress creates physical wear throughout the body. The prefrontal cortex, critical for self-regulation, is particularly vulnerable. A 2009 Cornell study of 195 17-year-olds found children who spent more time in poverty performed worse on working memory tasks. But when researchers factored out allostatic load, measured through blood pressure and cortisol, the poverty effect vanished. The culprit was stress, not poverty itself. Despite daunting stress research, neuroscientists discovered a powerful antidote: parental nurturing. Michael Meany's rat studies showed that mother rats who frequently licked and groomed their pups produced offspring that were braver, more social, less aggressive, had better self-control, and lived longer. When researchers cross-fostered pups, outcomes followed the rearing mother's behavior, not genetics. Maternal nurturing affected gene expression through methylation, literally switching on genes, controlling stress response. This has a human parallel. Clancy Blair's study of 1,200 infants showed that when mothers were attentive and responsive, environmental stressors had minimal impact on children's cortisol levels. Mary Ainsworth and John Bowlby demonstrated in the 1960s that infants whose parents promptly responded to emotional needs became more independent and self-reliant, contradicting behaviorist warnings against spoiling babies. When KIPP Academy's 1999 class scored highest in the Bronx, only 21% completed four-year degrees. Co-founder David Levin noticed successful graduates shared optimism, resilience, and social agility, not top grades. At elite Riverdale Country School, Dominic Randolph eliminated AP classes, arguing standardized tests miss crucial aspects of human success. These unlikely partners collaborated with Angela Duckworth, whose research on 164 eighth graders showed self-discipline predicted GPAs better than IQ. Together, they identified 7 traits predicting life satisfaction: grit, self-control, zest, social intelligence, gratitude, optimism, and curiosity. Levin embraced grading character alongside GPA. Randolph worried quantification might corrupt the metrics. Their disagreement revealed deeper tensions. These 7 strengths emphasized performance character, driving achievement rather than ethical behavior, leaving educators questioning whether this truly captured good character. While KIPP students battled poverty, Riverdale's affluent children faced affluent neglect, helicopter parents hovering anxiously without genuine connection. Madeline Levine's research revealed these children showed unexpectedly high rates of emotional problems, including anxiety, eating disorders, and self-harm. Sunia Luthar found wealthy teenagers used substances more than low-income peers and suffered elevated depression from excessive achievement pressures and isolation from parents, both physical and emotional. Many tied their worth entirely to achievements, breeding perpetual inadequacy. Riverdale teachers watched parents intervene at every academic difficulty, challenging grades or hiring tutors rather than letting children struggle. Randolph faced a dilemma. Wealthy parents viewed Riverdale as a risk management strategy to secure upper-class status, yet he believed students needed genuine failure to build character. The paradox was stark. Disadvantaged children develop grit through necessity, while privileged children lack opportunities for resilience precisely because they're shielded from adversity. Without practice facing challenges, affluent students remain vulnerable when encountering difficulties money can't solve. Elizabeth Spiegel transformed IS 318, a Brooklyn Title I school, into America's best middle school chess program by developing executive functions, particularly cognitive flexibility and self-control. "Teaching chess is really about teaching the habits that go along with thinking," she explained, "like how to understand your mistakes and how to be more aware of your thought processes." Rather than using textbooks, Spiegel analyzed students' actual tournament mistakes, forcing them to confront errors and explore alternatives. A key mental skill distinguishing masters is falsification, overcoming confirmation bias by actively seeking potential pitfalls rather than seeing only how moves might succeed. Chess mastery exemplifies Anders Ericsson's theory that expertise requires thousands of hours of deliberate practice. Spiegel connects this to Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi's concept of flow, that optimal state of complete absorption when stretched to your limits, and Angela Duckworth's definition of grit as sustained dedication to meaningful long-term goals. Chess gives children memorable experiences of mastery, demonstrating that character skills develop through deliberate practice in any domain capturing genuine interest. America has plummeted from 1st to 12th among developed nations in college graduation rates. Between 1976 and 2006, U.S. completion rates barely budged from 24 to 28%, while other countries surged ahead. This stagnation masks a class divide. College attainment among wealthy students rose from 61 to 68%, 1990 to 2000, while dropping from 11.1 to 9.5% among disadvantaged students. The real crisis isn't access, but completion. Economists William Bowen and Michael McPherson studied 200,000 students and found disadvantaged students were undermatching, attending schools below their qualifications, which decreased graduation chances. Their key finding? High school GPA, not standardized tests, was the strongest predictor of college completion. Tests correlated with IQ, while GPA correlated with self-control, revealing that motivation and perseverance predict success better than raw intelligence. This insight inspired Jeff Nelson to create One Goal, helping disadvantaged students complete degrees through ACT prep, college planning, and developing non-cognitive skills: resourcefulness, resilience, ambition, professionalism, and integrity. Results? 84% of one cohort persisted in college. Early intervention makes economic sense. It costs less than later remediation. But students like Kiwana Lerma, who achieved a 3.8 GPA despite overwhelming obstacles, deserve systematic support, not just applause. Minnesota's longitudinal study of 267 low-income families revealed attachment's lasting impact. Secure attachment at age one predicted social competence throughout childhood and greater self-confidence by age 10. Early parenting quality predicted high school graduation with 77% accuracy by age 4, better than IQ or test scores. Alicia Lieberman's child parent psychotherapy raised secure attachment rates in maltreating families from nearly 0 to 61% in 1 year. Heckman's reanalysis of Michigan's Perry Preschool Project revealed remarkable long-term outcomes: higher graduation rates, sustained employment, better earnings, lower crime. Non-cognitive factors, curiosity, self-control, social adaptability, emotional regulation, accounted for 2/3 of positive impacts. By understanding the science of character development, from stress neurochemistry to attachment psychology, we can create interventions addressing inequality's root causes. The challenge is translating this knowledge into practices, giving all children opportunity to develop skills they need to thrive. Success isn't just about what we know, it's about who we become.